I don't know if this has ever happened to you guys, but have you ever thought one thing and then very clearly been proven wrong the next minute? Never, just never happened. I mean, maybe it's just me. And personally, this does actually, happen all the time to me. It really does. I always have preconceived ideas about things, and then someone just comes and blows me out of the water. Now, it happens all the time, but I'll single out this one story. About 3 years ago, I was at the ACC National Conference. It was about the second time I was there, and there was this Emerging Leaders Conference, or part of the conference, that I was going to, right? And it was held in a different part of the facility. And I was looking around, I was looking at the signs, and there were a few that I was following, and it took us a while to get there, and as I was going along the journey, there were actually quite a few other people who joined me, and eventually it was a very large crowd that was going. And the people just filtered in from all different parts of the facility. Might have been afternoon tea or something, I don't know, and everyone was wrapping up, and we were all walking down this hallway towards this event, and we could see the event at the end of the hallway, and it was quite a narrow hallway, and there were a lot of us packed in there, so it got pretty dense. And it was while we were walking down there that I actually noticed something. I'd like to think that I'm not a particularly short person. Like I'm maybe 179 centimeters, something like that, which isn't short by any means, but it's not huge, but it's also not short, or so I thought. Walking down this corridor, I start looking at all of the people around me. I realized that maybe 2 out of the 200 people were shorter than me. Out of the 200, about 2 of them were shorter than me. And I swear the rest weren't taller by a small amount. They were taller by a vast amount. Nothing like that to make you feel small. I don't know what it is. I mean, maybe just ACC passes the tallest people on the planet or something. But like, I'm walking down and I feel like a dwarf. I'm like, hey, I'm starting to get what the Israelites were talking about when they felt like grasshoppers when they went into Canaan. Nothing like that to make me, you know, just feel small, just shattered my perception of myself. Now, every now and then, my perception of reality gets challenged by something. And I feel like, most commonly, that happens with my perception of God. God is so relational. He loves having relationship with us. He is so approachable and so loving and so caring. But sometimes it's like we are just chatting casually with each other. And then the sensation is like that he stands up and he points at something. And I'm like, whoa, you are way taller than I thought you were. That's a figure of speech, of course. Like, I'm not actually looking at God when I talk to him. But like, every now and then I'm just like, whoa, you're so much bigger than I thought you were. And it's like, it's like I just realized how tall I actually am next to him. God is so much bigger at all times than we think he is. I mean, just look at the miracles that were taking place around Jesus to point out who he was. Just putting it out there that his miracles, Jesus' miracles, were severely scaled down so that we would be able to chew on them. Turning 600 liters of water into wine, yeah, cool. That's pretty great. Raising someone from the dead, yeah, sick. That's fantastic. Feeding 5,000 people, awesome. But every now and then, something happens that just a little reveals a small taste of the scale of who Jesus is. Mark chapter 4, verse 35 to 41 in the NIV says, "That day, when evening came, he said to his disciples, 'Let us go over to the other side.' Leaving the crowd behind, they took him along, just as he was, in the boat. There were also other boats with him. A furious squall came up, and the waves broke over the boat, so that it was nearly swamped. Jesus was in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. The disciples woke him and said to him, 'Teacher, don't you care if we drown?' He got up, rebuked the wind, and said to the waves, 'Quiet, be still.' Then the wind died down, and it was completely calm. He said to his disciples, 'Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith?' and they were terrified and asked each other, who is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him. You know, we talk about Mother Nature a lot in our society. We have, especially since the advent of the internet, we have complete understanding of just how powerful nature is. Like the recent videos of bushfires, and you know, you've got a fire truck 1 minute, and then it's blue skies, nothing wrong. And then 30 seconds later, everyone's piled into the fire truck, water is spewing out of the fire truck to keep the fire truck safe, and this firestorm just goes, 30 seconds later, it's gone. And the fire truck, all it could do was sit there and spray water on itself to stay alive. When we see hurricanes just blow over towns, like what we see so many, like we see the absolute incredible scale of nature, and we see the destructiveness of nature sometimes, and how amazing it is, but it all obeys God. It all obeys Jesus. When we were at the Sea of Galilee, they actually told us the science behind how the Sea of Galilee turns into this ridiculous maelstrom when the wind hits it a certain way. The prevailing wind from a certain direction comes down off the mountains and hits the water, and you can get like 3 meter seas and for a fishing boat with like 100 kilometer an hour winds that's trying to sail, it was really, really, really dangerous. And that can happen in an instant, and they have to pay attention all the time when they are out on the water. And yet, it's all subject to Jesus. All Jesus does is he just speaks. He just says, quiet, be still. And it's quiet. And the disciples are terrified. They've seen Jesus performing miracles. This is like nothing else. There were only a couple of other times in Jesus' life where I think the tangible truth of just how big Jesus was were hinted at. And I don't mean small miracles that show some power. I mean the truth of who he is. One of them was the Transfiguration, where Jesus was shown to some of his disciples in his spiritual form on a mountain, where Jesus met with Moses and Elijah, both of whom are dead at this point. So Jesus gets shown to them in his spiritual form, and they're like, whoa, this is crazy. And then they see Moses and Elijah, who they recognize, by the way, and even though they lived like 1,000 years before, and he meets and he speaks, and they have an encounter with God the Father while they're there as well. That was one. And also the moment was when, the other moment was when Jesus died. The ground shook, the sky went dark, the curtain of the temple tore from top down, and long dead people in the hundreds got out of their tombs, walked around, and met with people they knew in the city. If that doesn't give you pause, I don't know what will. Is it any wonder that one of the Romans said, surely this was the Son of God? And then 3 days later, which is when culturally they believed that people were permanently dead and not just unconscious, he came back to life. There's a reason he came back 3 days later. All of these things were just hinting at the immensity of who he is. These were small things when compared to who he actually is. We see them as these huge events. Lazarus coming out of the tomb. Whoa, that's amazing. But in reality, when put next to the uncomfortable reality of who Jesus is, they are really, really small. So what is the reality of who Jesus is then? If those things are small, what are the big things? I just want to pop John chapter 1 up on the screen. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. Now we're just going to jump down to verse 10, I believe. He was in the world and through the world, and though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. Yet to all who did receive him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. Children born not of natural descent, nor of human decision or husband's will, but born of God. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. What is the reality of who Jesus is then? I would suggest to you tonight that there is one moment in the Bible when we actually get to see just a little more clearly how absolutely, completely beyond comprehension Jesus is. John chapter 1 just said, the world was created by him. How does the Bible say the world was created? If this doesn't blow your mind, I don't know what will. We know specifically from John that it was Jesus who created the world. And how did he create the world? He spoke. That's it. Jesus spoke. He didn't use magic. He didn't mutter an incantation. He didn't do anything with his hands or anything else. He just spoke. Let there be. And there was. With the entirety of creation, with the exception of humans. All he did was speak, and from the sheer authority of who he is, the universe couldn't help but be made. When God speaks, all nature and science follow the sound of his voice because of who he is. Who is he? My best answer, way more than we could ever possibly imagine. Every interaction that we have with Jesus is brought to our level. And every now and then we get a glimpse of the reality that we so often ignore. Now, when I was younger, I always get criticized when I say I'm young. When I was young, make myself sound old and I'm only 26. I had a high and a low expectation of myself at the same time. I was going through school and I wanted people to think that I had it together. I wanted people to like me after all. I wanted to be well thought of. I wanted people to think I was nice. But it was all a facade. I knew I didn't have it all together, but I lied to myself, and every now and then I would get a hint of what was actually under the surface and what was actually underneath the facade. Every now and then I would think something like, would anyone actually care if I died? I wanted to make an impact in other people's lives. I wanted to be remembered. I wanted desperately for people to think well of me, but somehow in my messed up interior, that desire got twisted from me wanting people to think well of me to maybe I can get them to miss me. Or maybe I could hurt them so badly that I was remembered by them. I wanted to be good, but in reality I was manipulative, arrogant, broken and deceitful. And then a moment came when I was standing before God in a room full of 6,000 people who are all having exactly the same experience. It was like when you turn a light on and the cockroaches scatter and you see the mess. And I allowed myself to fall apart. I gave up. I just let the facade go. I realized I needed Jesus when I allowed myself to fall apart. I was frantically trying to keep it all together, and when everything clicked into place for me was when I admitted the truth. That everything was falling apart for me, whether I admitted it or not. Now, hell is a real place. It was never intended for us. It was intended originally for angels who rebelled against God, but a consequence of our own rebellion against God is that that's now a destination for people too. And you know, I've met quite a few people who have a problem with the concept of hell, who don't like that idea. How could a good God ever send someone to hell? But you see, that was never actually my question. I never asked that question because I knew I deserved it. The power for me was in admitting the truth about myself. The powerful truth that without Jesus, I was nothing. And that without Jesus, I deserved to go to hell. Without Jesus, I was a horrible person. There were these two men who were crucified alongside Jesus, two thieves. Luke chapter 23, verse 32 to 43 is just going to come up on the screens. Two other men, both criminals, were also led out with him to be executed. When they came to the place called the Skull, they crucified him there along with the criminals, one on his right, one on his left. Jesus said, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing." And they divided up his clothes by casting lots. The people stood watching, and the rulers even sneered at him. They said, "He saved others. Let him save himself if he is God's Messiah, the Chosen One." The soldiers also came up and mocked him. They offered him wine vinegar and said, "If you are the King of the Jews, save yourself." There was a written notice above him which read, "This is the King of the Jews." One of the criminals who hung there hurled insults at him. "Aren't you the Messiah? Save yourself and us." But the other criminal rebuked him. "Don't you fear God," he said, "since you are under the same sentence. We are punished justly, for we are getting what our deeds deserve, but this man has done nothing wrong." Then he said, "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom." Jesus answered him, "Truly I tell you, today you will be with me in paradise." Jesus was hanging on the cross. The Son of God, the Creator of the universe, hung on a couple of pieces of wood to die, crucified with thieves. And one of those thieves was mocking Jesus. He's like, "You're the Savior, right? The one who's meant to save everyone. Why don't you save yourself? And while you're at it, save us too." The Bible says that the other thief rebuked the first thief. And he said, "Do you not fear God at all? We are all under the same death sentence. And we are both receiving justice because we are both getting what we deserve. But this man has done nothing wrong." And then he turned to Jesus and he said, there's a reason I'm repeating this, "Remember me when you come into your kingdom." He didn't ask God to forgive his sins. You see, he knew exactly who he was. He knew he was nothing compared to Jesus. He knew he had no right to ask for a relationship with God. He knew he wasn't good enough to get into heaven. He had a complete understanding of this. Instead, all he asked was if he could live on in Jesus' memory, for him to not be forgotten after he was gone. He knew how little he was worth in his own eyes and in the eyes of the world, and that is all he dared to ask for. He didn't ask to go to heaven. He didn't ask for a relationship with God. But you know what? Jesus took him on the journey anyway. Jesus' reply to the thief was, "Today, you will be with me in paradise." The thief was there in Jesus' presence. He was having a very real encounter with God. And knowing his position, all he dared ask for was to be remembered, to not be forgotten, but Jesus gave him far more than that. You see, we don't ask God for salvation. We don't ask Jesus for salvation and then pull ourselves up when he extends his hand. He extends his hand, and with the understanding that we do not deserve it, we accept it and he pulls us up. Try as we might, we do not deserve to be saved. We are all equal before God because none of us deserve him. But you know what? Choosing to see myself for what I was, letting my false belief that everything was going well shatter, and admitting before God that I needed him was the most worthwhile and powerful thing that I have ever done. I was like that thief. I was like that thief because I knew who I was. I knew I didn't have the right to ask Jesus for anything. We see the immensity of Jesus in that moment where he speaks the universe into existence. But what I think is even more jaw-dropping is that he came to earth, lived and died as a human being, just so we could approach him and have relationship with him if we are willing to accept it. And because of that incredible act, I'm here, this 14-year-old, really quite pathetic excuse for a human being, in a room with the creator of the universe, and for the first time in my life, I have a pretty good understanding of who I am standing before. And Jesus is extending his hand towards me. And he's saying, "Do you want me to save you?" And I'm standing there saying, "I don't deserve it. I know. I don't care. I love you anyway. Come and join me." It was the best thing I have ever done, and if I am only remembered for one thing on this planet, let it be that I said yes. The reality of who Jesus is not lost on me. He saved me, and I have been feeling his presence and power in my life ever since. There is an uncomfortable reality about Jesus, and that reality is that he is so much bigger than we could ever grasp. We could never hope to be good enough for him, but the good news of the gospel is that he wants us anyway. Jesus wants us so badly that he died to make a way for us to have relationship with him. And then he rose again, leaving all of our sin behind in death. Jesus came to set us free. He came to save the lost.